Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The Dick Clock Podcast is powered by Pella Windows and Doors. Make sure you check out their showrooms in Omaha and Lincoln. Great place to get your window and door journey started. Or check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. And the Nick Pop Podcast is powered by Shoot 360 Lincoln, the world's most advanced basketball training facility. It's a membership-based national franchise that uses NBA-level technology that provides real-time feedback after every shooting, passing, and ball handling rep you take inside of our facility right here in Lincoln, Nebraska, 48th and Van Dorn, and Van Dorn Plaza is where we're located. But make sure you check out our brand new website. It is pretty slick. Go to shoot360lincoln.com. Shoot360lincoln.com. You can learn more about the facility, the technology, and what we offer: camps, clinics, classes, personal training, and so much more. So check us out, shoot360lincoln.com. Okay, it is Friday, March 8th. I apologize to everyone for not getting more pods out lately. Life has been absolutely crazy with my schedule for basketball broadcasting with a lot of travel. Last 14 nights, I've only slept in my bed at home two nights. I've called games in Lawrence, Kansas, Milwaukee, Cincinnati, Chicago, Ann Arbor, Albuquerque just a day ago. So I've been all over the place. So I apologize, but I'm here now. And about to hit the road again this week, this weekend and next week. I got Nebraska at Michigan on BTN on Sunday afternoon. Very excited about that. And then next week, I'm with Westwood One calling the Big Sky Conference Championship game in Boise, Idaho next Wednesday night. And then I'm calling the America East Championship game next Saturday, likely in Vermont. So I am pumped for that. This time of year is just the best. Okay. On the pod today, literally right before I was about to hit record, some big news broke. Greg McDermott has signed a contract extension and is staying at Creighton. So we got to start the conversation there. Incredible news for Creighton basketball. And I'm not going to lie, I was a little nervous for a bit about this. Obviously, there's been rumors circulating over the past month or two about Greg McDermott and maybe another job, and then Chris Holtmann gets fired and Ohio State pops open. There's history there between Ohio State and Greg McDermott. They courted him before. I was a little nervous about this, but I knew at the end of the day that Greg McDermott wanted to be at Creighton. He wanted to be in Omaha. I think he just wanted a few things contractually in place and around the program in the right spot for that to fully happen. I think it was more about those things than any other job and the allure of that job. Like, I never really felt like Greg McDermott wanted to leave Creighton. And when that's the case, I eventually, over the last few weeks, felt like ultimately he would end up staying in Omaha. Ohio State was after him again. Certainly the looming Louisville vacancy was a possibility. He was a highly coveted coach because he's a damn good coach. But I remember back in 2017, when Ohio State came knocking and offered Greg McDermott the job. I remember there was all the reports on it, and then my phone rang in the morning around 9 a.m. And I grab my phone and I see it's Coach McDermott. And my first thought was, oh, Max calling me to tell me that he's leaving and he wanted to hear it, me to hear it from him before it went public. That's what before I hit answer the call, that's what I thought was that's what the call was. But instead, he just wanted to talk about his decision and the job with me. Remember, he said he wanted, he's like, Nick, I want someone's opinion on everything that I trust, that gets it, that isn't family, but really understands the entire situation. And I said, okay. And we talked for quite a long time. I bet we talked for at least 30 minutes. And, man, we laid it all out. Contract, resources, brand, recruiting, expectations, family, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when we hung up, I'm not going to lie, when I hit end on that call after I said bye, I wasn't totally sure where he landed. I thought, based on our conversation, he was leaning towards staying, but it wasn't 100% in my mind when we ended our conversation. But in that 30-minute chat back in 2017, in that 30-minute chat, Mac delivered the line that he gave publicly later that day when he announced that he's turning down the job and was staying at Creighton. He delivered the line to me on the phone that he gave publicly of, don't mess with happy. He kept on saying that to me. Kept on saying, Nick, I'm happy here. I love it here. I love Omaha. I love coaching at Creighton. I don't mess with happy. And that stuck with me. So when he delivered that line publicly and announcing that he wanted to stay, I kind of smiled because I knew that that was at the core of his decision. He had chased the quote-unquote bigger job at Iowa State, never really got the culture right. Things didn't work out there. He lands at Creighton. He had got the culture right. It's, you know, don't mess with happy. Well, here we are 7 years later, and Ohio State knocking on the door again. And this time around, I think that mantra, don't mess with happy, was maybe more about the university and Creighton and the president and Marcus Blossom. They were needed that mantra, maybe even more so than Greg McDermott did. I think don't mess with happy was more on the minds of those individuals this time around. Because I think there maybe was a world where if this wasn't handled right over the last month or so, I think if this wasn't handled right, I think there was a world where Greg McDermott would have maybe left. But I think when it came right down to it, the big decision makers involved in this, the athletic director, the president, the board of directors, the big money boosters, I think it was more of them having to recite the mantra that Greg McDermott stated 7 years ago, don't mess with happy. Don't mess with happy. And the bottom line is Creighton basketball is in a happy place. Sixth nationally in attendance this year. Excluding the COVID year with limited fans, Creighton has had now 12 straight years being top 10 nationally in attendance. Creighton went to the Elite Eight last year. Went to the Sweet 16 3 years ago. They have 13 20-plus win seasons in 14 years under Greg McDermott. They have a Big East regular season conference championship under Greg McDermott. They have eight, about to be nine trips to the NCAA tournament under Greg McDermott. Would have been 10 if COVID didn't cancel the tournament in 2020. Greg McDermott has nine NCAA tournament wins. So to put it in the terms of what we are talking about and the spirit of my point, Creighton basketball is happy. Don't mess with happy. Thankfully, the decision makers got together and I think came to that realization. Hey, don't mess with happy. Let's get this done. So Creighton now has Greg McDermott under a new five-year deal the deal includes one-year rollovers if Greg McDermott wants to keep coaching. So basically, guys, basically, for all intents and purposes, Greg McDermott just signed a lifetime contract at Creighton. Incredible news. Incredible. I feel so lucky and fortunate to get to cover Greg McDermott's teams. I've had a front row seat to 14 incredible seasons of basketball and incredible coaching. And now we all get to see more of it. So congrats to Greg McDermott. Shout out to Marcus Blossom and Father Henriksen and all the big power players here for getting this done. And then congrats to all the Blue Jay fans that get to keep their head coach, Greg McDermott, for the foreseeable future. This is just amazing news for Omaha, for Creighton, and most certainly for Creighton basketball. Creighton basketball is in a happy place. Don't mess with happy. Okay, let's get to the rest of the pod that I had cooked up for you. So sticking with Creighton. A little over a month ago, I had a whole segment on my pod about, you know, who is the best transfer ever under Greg McDermott? And I discussed this and laid out my rankings. And at the time, I didn't have Baylor Shireman at number one. I had Marcus Foster. But I provided the caveat that this could all change based on how the season finishes up and how the final year wraps up for Baylor Shireman. Well, I'm here to tell all of you, as we've watched Baylor Shireman's last month or so, my official rankings have changed, and Baylor Shireman is the best transfer ever under Greg McDermott. He's a lock for first-team All-Big East. He's playing like a first- or second-team All-American, in my opinion. And to me, he's right there with Tristan Newton, in my opinion, for Big East Player of the Year. If I had a vote, I'd give it to Baylor Shireman. He'd get my vote. But my guess is Tristan Newton will get it. That's just where I'm leaning towards. If I had to predict what happens, my guess it'll be Tristan Newton. But he has had an incredible season. I thought John Bishop put it best to me when I went on Sportsmanlike Conduct with Bishop and Josh Peterson. I thought he put it best in asking me, he said, you know, Greg McDermott has had better scorers, better passers, better defenders, better shooters, and maybe better rebounders. But has he ever had anyone that's as good at all those things as Baylor Shireman is? And sometimes a question is so perfectly stated that I didn't even want to like ruin it with an answer. I was like, John, that is perfect. That is like the perfect way to put it. Now, Doug McDermott was the better player, obviously, right? Doug was the better scorer. He's one of the most decorated college basketball players of all time. Doug was a better scorer. Maurice Watson was a better passer. Kyrie Thomas was a better defender. Ethan Rogge was a better shooter. You can debate rebounder. Maybe a guy like Echenique was a better rebounder. But when you combine all of those things, scoring, passing, rebounding, shooting, I think you can make a pretty good argument that Baylor Shireman is the best all-around player Greg McDermott's ever coached. At Creighton. And to me, the best all-around players, like Baylor's right up there. It's an exclusive club where you got, you know, Doug, Zagorowski, Kyrie Thomas, Maurice Watson, Tyshawn Alexander, like those kinds of guys. And Baylor Shireman is right near the top of that list. Best transfer ever under Greg McDermott. By the way, as I'm taping this, like I said, it's Friday, March 8th. Creighton is at Villanova tomorrow. And you know, we'll see what happens here. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Creighton lost that game. I mean, Villanova's a bad matchup for Creighton. Creighton struggles with teams that have five men that can stretch out to the three-point line, and because then that drags Kalkbrenner out, and that kind of disrupts how Creighton wants to operate defensively. They struggle with teams that can switch a bunch of screens and get physical. But so Villanova's a bad matchup for Creighton, and Villanova beat Creighton earlier without Justin Moore in Omaha back in December. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if Villanova won. But even if that happens, it doesn't really alter how I feel about Creighton heading into the postseason. I feel really good about where this team is at. I feel like Creighton is playing really good basketball. They're peaking at the right time. They're 6-1 in their last seven games. Their only loss was on the road at St. John's. And I thought Creighton actually, I thought they missed good shots. I mean, Ashworth and Shireman couldn't throw it in the ocean. St. John's made a bunch of tough mid-range twos, which is kind of what Creighton's willing to give up. So I didn't necessarily leave that game going, oh, man. But Creighton hammers UConn. They played well in the second half against Marquette. Hammered Seton Hall. I like where this team is at. Feels like the big three Kalkbrenner, Trey Alexander, Shireman, they're all playing well. We've talked about it, but Steven Ashworth has found his groove. Farabello played well against Marquette. Even if a guy like Isaac Trout was the spark against Seton Hall at home with back-to-back threes in the first half that led to the Avalanche. Add to the to all this the March NCAA tournament experience on this roster. There's a lot to like about this group and where they're at. And listen, there's a world, like if Creighton finishes the season strong here, there's a world where they could get to, you know, a three seed, hell, even a two seed, depending on what happens around the country with some other teams. With Tyler Kolek banged up, could Marquette kind of fade down the stretch here? Could Creighton end up leaping them, getting a two seed? You know, some projections have Baylor as a two seed. Could Creighton leap a Baylor, depending on what happens in the Big 12 tournament? Maybe. Again, all the computer metrics, all the advanced, the computers like Creighton a lot. KenPom, Creighton's 10th. In the net today, they're 11th. Bart Torvik has them 12th. The BPI has Creighton 10th. So Creighton is highly thought of. And if they finish the season strong here, landing a two or a three seed is not out of the question. Right now, Mike DeCourcy has Creighton as a three seed. Lenardi has Creighton as a three seed. Jerry Palm has Creighton as a three seed. And Tim Kruger at Stadium has Creighton as a three seed, just to talk about a couple of publications I always like to look at. So most have the Blue Jays right at three line. And to me, I feel like, you know, Lenardi has that like arrow turning up, turning down. Like to me, like the arrow could be going up. So we'll see how things wrap up for the Blue Jays. Any way you slice it, I like where Creighton is at right now. Shifting to Nebraska a little bit. I've heard this discussion a lot over the past week or so. Is Keisei Tominaga the most popular Nebraska player ever? It's interesting to think about. He's certainly not the best, not even close. But in terms of someone that the fan base really reacted to, and someone that when that player did something, it landed different with the fans. I'm not sure I can really think of anyone else in my lifetime above Tominaga on that front. He's got such a unique game and a unique journey, a unique story, and a unique on-the-floor personality that he's truly a one-of-a-kind. Been here 3 years, so that helps. The fan base has gotten to know him, watch him grow. And once it all kind of clicked for Tominaga, right around late January, February 1st of last year, once it all really clicked for Tominaga, the fans got to watch someone that was truly different. Like, the fun players to watch in sports are the ones that every time you watch them, you might see something you've never seen before. And there is this feeling that at any moment they could fully explode. Tominaga provided a basketball viewing experience that is truly unique. He'll take shots that nobody else in college basketball would even dream of taking. And literally at any moment, there could be a 90-second flurry of holy shit moments. That was Tominaga. He wasn't always consistent. You might sit down to watch a Nebraska game and none of what I said happens. He might go 1-for-4 and have 5 points and do nothing. But that possibility, that threat, that chance is always there. So he wasn't the most consistent, but man, he was must-see TV because he kept you on the edge of your seat, didn't he? And when it clicked and he exploded, Pinnacle Bank Arena always exploded with him. I'm always fascinated by who the crowd really reacts to in college basketball at home venues. The crowd will kind of tell you who they really adore, because not all roars are created equal. Like a Doug McDermott roar was different than a Will Artino roar, and a Baylor Shireman roar is different than a Fred King roar. And I got to say, a Keisei Tominaga roar, I don't think there has been anything like it at Pinnacle Bank for sure. And maybe even going back to Devaney too. He's not the best player ever at Nebraska, not even close. But he maybe created the best roars of the crowd. Not a bad legacy to have. Not a bad legacy at all. So I was thinking about all Big Ten postseason honors, all Big East postseason honors. And, you know, I think first team for Big East is actually fairly easy. Like Tristan Newton, Tyler Kolek, Devin Carter, Baylor Shireman, Ryan Kalkbrenner. Like those five guys, pretty easy. The second team, I think, will 100% have Trey Alexander on it. So Creighton will have their big three represented on the first and second teams. I think Kalkbrenner will win Defensive Player of the Year again, which will give him three straight, which is remarkable. I told you a little bit ago, I'd vote Baylor Shireman as the Big East Player of the Year, but we'll see how that goes. I mean, you kind of say out loud all those things. Can a team that doesn't win the league get two guys on the first team, get the Defensive Player of the Year and the Conference Player of the Year? That's hard to do. Even though it's probably warranted, it's hard to do. And then when you think about the Big Ten, I was thinking about this on my flight home from Albuquerque. When you think about the Big Ten, gosh, dang it, I really want someone for Nebraska to get a first-team All-Big Ten nod. I mean, Nebraska could finish in third place. Third. Someone on the third-place team deserves some love, don't they? But what's hard is, with how Nebraska's built, it's tough to kind of figure out which Husker is that guy. Like, there isn't this, you could talk to a lot of different people and maybe get a lot of different answers. You might get some Tominaga. You might get some Rink Mast. You might get some Jawan Gary. There's such a balanced team that it kind of makes it challenging to figure out, okay, who is that first team all-conference guy? But to me, Tominaga, Gary Mast, yeah, throw in Bryce Williams. Like, those are the four guys that I would even say are under consideration. But Nebraska's team, being so balanced and not dependent on one guy almost, you know, night to night with this team, makes it hard. One night, Tominaga's the man. The next night, it's Rink Mast. Then it's Gary. Then it's Wilcher. Then on and on and on. So it's not necessarily obvious who that guy is and who would it be. So it's tough. I would say, like, if I was doing a first team right now, the guys that I kind of feel like you can just lock them in, Zach Edey, Terrence Shannon, Boo Booey, and then I think you got to throw Braden Smith in there. That guy's had a big-time year. Probably a top-10 point guard in college basketball. Those four, to me, are like, those four probably are locked in there. So that final spot up for grabs. And there are a lot of guys that are deserving. Marcus Domask, Jameer Young, Coleman Hawkins, AJ Storr, Peyton Sanford. And then the Nebraska guys I just listed. To me, I'd say it comes down to four guys for that final spot on the first team. AJ Storr, Marcus Domask, Peyton Sanford, and Jawan Gary. AJ Storr has been incredible for Wisconsin. They've kind of struggled down the stretch a little bit here. Marcus Domask, I think the world of that guy, big time player. There's been moments where he's been arguably Illinois' best player. Peyton Sanford has been the key to Iowa's late surge here. But man, what I think I would want to do is put Jawan Gary in that fifth and final spot. I'd have all those guys I just listed on the second team, AJ Storr, Sanford, and Domask. I'd also give Marcus Domask Newcomer of the Year as well. But I think if I had to give it, I would give Jawan Gary that final fifth spot on first team. As the season has progressed, I think it's been clear that Jawan Gary is the most deserving of that kind of an accolade from Nebraska's roster. He's their best defender. He's their best offensive rebounder. He's the toughest guy on the team. They really need his versatility. It's, you know, when he hurt that calf and was out for a little bit, Nebraska really struggled. And while Tominaga is the leading scorer, he's been a little too inconsistent. Jawan Gary has been the most consistent performer. And I am a believer that to the victor go the spoils. So Nebraska needs to get some love on that first team spot if they finish in third place. And I'd tab Gary to be that guy. Will it happen? I don't know. Again, Nebraska doesn't have like that obvious one guy, like that boo-boo-y in terms of like how that team's built, where it's like Boo is the guy. You got to really watch Gary to appreciate Gary. You look at Gary's stats, they're not amazing, but you got to watch Gary to appreciate him. So we'll see what happens. I'd love to see Gary get some love on that first team. Obviously, Zach Edey's the conference player of the year. Like I said, Marcus Domask is going to be the newcomer of the year. That's who I'd vote for. Not sure on defensive player of the year, Ace Baldwin, Coleman Hawkins. You could get, Gary could get some love there. It'd be interesting with sixth man of the year because at one point that was definitely C.J. Wilcher. But I don't know. Last month, he's slowed down a little bit. After his incredible 22-point performance in that Wisconsin amazing win in Pinnacle Bank Arena, Wilcher hasn't been in double figures since that game. And since that game, he's 5-for-29 from three in his last eight games. So I don't know if he, at one point I thought he kind of had it locked up. I don't know now. We'll see. And then there's Big Ten Coach of the Year. And the question is Fred Hoiberg the Big Ten Coach of the Year? If you look at the top of the Big Ten standings, Purdue, Illinois, Wisconsin, Northwestern, all those teams, they were expected to be there. And all those teams returned either their entire core or their best player or best players. Purdue returned everyone on a team that won the Big Ten a year ago, including the Big Ten Player of the Year in Edey. Illinois returned Terrence Shannon and Coleman Hawkins. Wisconsin returned all five starters on a team that went to the Final Four of the NIT. Northwestern returned their star, Boo Booey, on a team that won an NCAA tournament game. And then there is Nebraska. Lost their two best players in Derek Walker and Sam Griesel. They're picked to finish 12th in the preseason in the Big Ten. Nebraska doesn't really have a point guard. And here we are, final weekend of the regular season, and Nebraska could finish third. You know, it's tough with Coach of the Year votes and criteria because how you view it may be different than how I view it. Because it is sometimes, and we do this with Coach of the Year, for National Coach of the Year, Conference Coach of the Year, whatever. It's silly to punish a guy like Matt Painter for building a championship roster and retaining it, right? Because recruiting a roster is of talent and getting, like, that's a huge part of coaching. So I get that. But I also think when judging coaching in a season, I do think you got to take into consideration, you know, your situation, what was expected of you, what you got out of your team. And I just look at Fred Hoiberg, and to me, he's the Big Ten Coach of the Year. Picked to finish 12th, lost two best players, didn't have a true point guard all season long because of the Aaron Ulis Iowa gambling thing. And what did he do? He got Nebraska with a chance to finish third in the Big Ten. They're looking at an NCAA tournament bid. They were undefeated at home in conference play this year. They beat Purdue. They beat Michigan State. They beat Wisconsin. And he did all of that without any NBA-level star. They don't have a guy like Terrence Shannon. They don't have a guy like Boo Booey. They don't have a guy like Zach Edey. 21-9 heading into the final game of the regular season. 11 Big Ten wins. Likely will get to 12 this weekend if they go take care of business at Michigan. Incredible. And listen, I like this roster, but this roster isn't perfect either. No true point guard, isn't stacked with the elite next level talent, and he has just completely maximized them. On a roster where everybody, we talk about how it's balanced and it could be a different guy every night. Well, for that to work, the roster and the locker room has to buy into that. Because it's easy for guys when it's there's not like a clear hierarchy of like this is clearly the best player. Like at Creighton's locker room, everybody knows it's like Kalkbrenner, Shireman, and Trey Alexander. Those are the top three dogs. They're getting all the shots. They deserve it all. Like, and then everybody else kind of just gets in where they fit in. Like they fall into place. You can You could ask C.J. Wilcher, Tomo Naga, Rink Mass, Jawan Gary, Bryce Williams. You could ask a lot of those guys. They maybe all think like, nah, I'm the guy. I'm the dude. And if you succumb to too much of that, it gets harder to trust that, hey, tonight, it's Wilcher's tonight. Let's ride C.J. Let's do this, C.J. And it can get hard to trust, okay, Rink Mass, got it going. It's Rink's night. Let's get it. That can be hard. And so that's coaching too. So I think Fred Hoiberg deserves Big Ten Coach of the Year. Don't get me wrong. If Matt Painter gets it, I totally get that too. I'm a huge Painter fan. I love Paint. I think he's a great coach. Back-to-back Big Ten titles, dominated the league this year. I am totally fine with that too. In fact, that's my guess on who gets it. But for me, taking the entire scope into consideration, Big Ten Coach of the Year, Nebraska wins this weekend, I'd give it to Fred Hoiberg. Pretty amazing. Speaking of you know, we talked about Greg McDermott on this pod. It's kind of my final thought as I wrap up. We talked about Greg McDermott. We talked about Fred Hoiberg. In some ways, if you think about it, one of the turning points for Creighton basketball was the change Greg McDermott made in terms of style of play in the CIT at the end of the first year for Greg McDermott back in 2010. People got to remember, when Greg McDermott was at Northern Iowa, a little bit at Iowa State, but when he showed up in Omaha, Greg McDermott was more of a slow-paced, pack defense, tons of sets, grind, win in the 60s kind of a coach. That's more of like who he was. He went from that to a fast-paced, tempo, threes, transition, freedom offensively kind of a team and kind of a program. And that's become the identity of the program. I mean, when you ask people about Creighton basketball, their answer is a direct reflection of that change that Greg McDermott made at the end of year one here in Omaha. Mac's willingness to change and adapt and be open to something different changed the trajectory of Creighton basketball. The other thing that's been so important in Greg McDermott's success at Creighton has been, he's not just been good, he's been great at hiring assistant coaches. Darren DeVries, one of the rising stars in college basketball. 20 wins every year at Drake, multiple bids to the NCAA tournament, big-time coach. Patrick Sellers just was voted Coach of the Year in his conference, was an assistant under Greg McDermott. Paul Lusk changed the way Creighton defends and infused some teeth and some pride on that end of the floor. And I think it kind of changed where Creighton was at as a program. And right now, Lusk is back at Purdue. He's Painter's right-hand man. Lusk is incredible. Steve Lutz took Texas A&M Corpus Christi to two NCAA tournaments, and he's now the head coach of Western Kentucky. And then the most recent one, Alan Huss, year one at High Point, wins the league, is the conference coach of the year. And now his staff currently is great. Mac has hired great assistant coaches, and that makes a huge difference. So you think back over the tenure for Greg McDermott and the success. His willingness to change and adapt style of play, and then hiring the right assistant coaches and the right people, both those things have played huge parts. Who does that sound like? Willingness to change, willingness to adapt, making the right hires on the coaching staff, and then success follows. Who does that sound like? Does that kind of sound like Fred Hoiberg right now? Just interesting, and something I was thinking about as I was reflecting on Greg McDermott and then Fred Hoiberg's kind of amazing two-year turnaround here. The parallels of those two things are, in my opinion, are interesting. Greg McDermott's changing / tweaking his style of play. Fred Hoiberg did that 2 years ago. And the importance of hiring great assistant coaches and the right people for what you need. Greg McDermott has done that time and time again in his 14 years at Creighton. And Fred Hoiberg has now done that with Nate Lenzer and Adam Howard and Ernie Ziegler. And it just goes to show you, it goes to show you a couple of things. Number one, you are often only as good as the people around you as a coach. And while that, a lot of that can apply to your players, it also can really apply to your staff. Behind every great coach and every great program is some kick-ass, amazing assistant coaches. You need to hire the right people. The people whose strengths are what the program needs. Maybe even the kind of people whose strengths are where your weaknesses lie. Greg McDermott, I think, recognized it. Greg McDermott is an offensive-minded guy. He's a great offensive mind, an elite offensive mind. He needed help on the defensive end of the floor, so he hired Paul Lusk about 7-8 years ago. Boom, helped a ton. Fred Hoiberg, great offensive mind, kind of a laid-back guy, not super confrontational and fiery. So he hires Nate Lenzer and Adam Howard, two guys who have great defensive minds, and Lenzer in particular is fiery, and he's a get-after-your-ass type of assistant coach. So important. And so simple, yet so many coaches have blind spots with this stuff. Either they're, you know, a little arrogant and think, I can do it, I got this. Or they hire their friends, or they are blind to their own weaknesses and don't want to get out of their comfort zone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Greg McDermott and Fred Hoiberg, they're very low ego, humble guys. They're both very self-aware guys. And I think those traits have served them well. And the other thing it shows is, and this is really hard to balance as a head coach. You know, as a head coach, you need to be incredibly confident in your way of doing things and your system and your style, but also be humble enough and open enough to know when that line is when you need to maybe consider change. You can't be one of those coaches who changes their identity every year. This year we're going to be a zone team. Next year we're going to press. Then the next year we're going to play pack line defense. And the next year we're going to trap ball screens. And then we're going to shoot threes. And then we're going to pound it inside. No, can't be that. You can't be one of those coaches who changes their identity every year. That won't work, because if you aren't bought into what you are selling, then the players certainly won't be either. But there is that point, and nobody fully knows when that point reveals itself. But there is that point when you need to look in the mirror and fully be honest with yourself and be willing to say, this isn't working. Or what do we need to change? What do we need to alter? What do we need to tweak? So a head coach has to be equally stubborn and supremely confident, but also humble and open-minded. And those things are tough to balance. And I think both Greg McDermott and Fred Hoiberg have shown themselves to have all of that. Fred Hoiberg's willingness to say, you know what, I think I got to part ways with Matt Abdelmassi and go in a different direction, which was tough because they were longtime friends. They'd worked together a ton with the Timberwolves, Iowa State. But he knew he's got to go. The culture was bad. The recruiting profile had to get changed. They needed to go in a different direction with who they were targeting. They needed to go in a different direction with their defensive approach and culture. Fred Hoiberg was willing to look in the mirror, slide his program under the microscope, and identify those things, change them, and look what has happened. Past year and a half, 2 years, speak for itself. Again, second best record in the Big Ten since February 1st of last year. I was thinking about that and the correlation from Greg McDermott 13 years ago to some of the things he's done well with Fred Hoiberg and what we're in the midst of kind of seeing in terms of the changes and the transformation and the seeds starting to grow because of those things. Pretty cool stuff.
A Herd at Sports Network production.